Joe Donnelly addresses the crime problem in Indianapolis. What can be done? Success for Donnelly's bill to address military suicide, public hearings on the Healthy Indiana Plan, and free meals in Indianapolis schools. That plus Jim Nabors at the Speedway for the last time and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 30, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly held a pair of meetings in Indianapolis to address the recent crime wave. It's the first time Donnelly has sought public input to address the crime problem here. Delise Irvin McDaniel went to one of those meetings. She says in 2011, someone shot and killed her husband while he sat in his car. Irvin McDaniel and several others say they want to see more programs to steer young people away from violence.
We come up with all this money for apartments and everything else. We should be able to come up for money for our future. And that's our kids. And it just, you know, this killing is just... made me sick.
Can Senator Donnelly make a difference? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, what, if anything, can Washington do to help?
Well, I mean, it's always good to have a conversation about these kinds of issues. I mean, I give him style points for doing that. I think it's important to do. He talked about the crime problems here, and he also talked about the heroin problem in Boone and Hamilton County and had meetings up there. And if there are programs available in Washington, D.C. to help with anything that's going on in urban areas like this, then if he can help bring those back, that's a huge plus. But, you know, it's one of those kinds of things where, you know, you got to have people have the dialogue first to find out what's really going on. And I was surprised how few people participated. I don't think they were very well publicized. The state's largest newspaper didn't even write a story about him, which to me is amazing. But, you know, the more conversation we have about this kind of thing, the better. Just like the mayor has been having community conversations all across Indianapolis about these same issues. And it's always good because people in different neighborhoods are dealing with different things, and it's always good to find out what's going on and how it affects them. And maybe you, because of that, can generate things that will help in the long haul.
Well, with the mayor and local officials, you expect this sort of thing. With a U.S. senator, it's unusual.
Well, it's unusual, but and he recognizes the limitations on him as a U.S. senator. He recognizes this is largely a local issue. But there are things the federal government can do to help. There is grant money available that he can make local officials and local community groups aware of. And most importantly, perhaps of all, he can bring them all to the table. Because it wasn't only the people at these meetings. He also met with a lot of policymakers in the city to talk about what Washington could do to help. It's a serious problem. I mean, we just had, two more murders and then another shooting of a police officer, thank heaven, wearing a vest this morning. So, I mean, we have a really out-of-control crime problem in Indianapolis, and I think it should be all hands on board.
And Senator Donnelly also did a ride-around in Hawville with a IMPD police officer. He's sending the message that he's interested, at the very least.
Well, and I think this is, as Ann says and Mike said, too, this is really an issue that begs for leadership. and it begs for everybody to be involved in the process. We saw the great effort that this community put together to try to attract another Super Bowl. We need to have that kind of cooperation. We need to have that kind of buy-in and investment from everyone to solve this very real problem. And until that happens, because it's still a political issue for many people, but until that happens, we're going to struggle with this. It has to be beyond politics. It has to be for the good of the community.
And the shootings that took place today are prompting some national media attention. It's hurting the city.
Oh, I think any time you have the perception of a crime spree unabated, it's frustrating. You look at the crime rate or the number of homicides, for instance, and violent crimes, where we are at this point in the year, not even at, the halfway point or almost there, we're at a play at a pace we don't want to be in terms of.
Well, it compares to a couple of previous years, 2006 and I believe 1999. We've had crime waves that compare with this one.
Well, and I think one reason it's smart to have these conversations now, we're coming up on the start of what traditionally and sadly is the high crime season because temperatures are up, tempers flare, a lot of kids aren't. Or out at night, school's not an issue. So it's good to have the conversation and whether let's be frank, no one person is going to solve this problem, right. But it's good to have the conversation.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, do you feel safe in Indianapolis? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it depends. Last week's question was, will Indianapolis ever get another Super Bowl? 60% said yes, 23% said no, 17% said only if we build another new stadium. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Senator Donnelly also highlighted a recent legislative success this week. It involves his ongoing efforts to reduce military suicide with a bill that calls for mental health assessments for all service members. It also mandates improved services, better reporting, and privacy protection for those seeking treatment. It's called the Jacob Sexton Act. The farmland native was on a 15-day leave from Afghanistan when he took his own life in 2009. His father was on hand as Senator Donnelly announced the bill had been passed by the Senate Armed Services Committee. Jeff Sexton says he won't give up until there's more help for our military members.
I'm here to say the fight's not over. I'm going to fight for our service members, National Guard, Reserve, active duty, and I'm also going to take this fight for our veterans.
And Delaney, that bill is now included in the Defense Authorization Act. Does that guarantee passage?
Nothing in this life is guaranteed except maybe death and taxes, but it's obviously on a strong trajectory for success. And Senator Donnelly's shown tremendous leadership in this because we have a huge problem here, and I don't think everybody understands just how desperate it is. When you look at the statistics and you see that for the last 2 years, we have almost three times the numbers of deaths from suicides of service members that we do from combat. And, we've had people over there for multiple tours, and yet particularly with, as I understand it, with the Reserve and National Guard, they're falling through the cracks for these kinds of evaluations. I think it's a great idea on his part, and I think there's going to be strong bipartisan support for the initiative.
Yeah, lots of talk today, of course, with the VA secretary resigning about what's going on with treatment for veterans. But this is about treatment for active duty members who, in many cases, if they don't get proper treatment, become veterans with problems.
This was huge because once you get into this act, your chances of passage are pretty good because generally this has been passed, 52 years in a row, whatever it's in the Defense Act. Has usually passed with bipartisan support. I agree with Ann. I think it will get that. So getting it in there was the key, and he did, and he deserves credit for doing that. I think this is good legislation and something that ought to be done across the board in the military.
Yeah, he tried to get it in there last year without success, something he's been working 2 years to accomplish.
Well, this is something I think that members of Congress can do with relative ease and on both sides of the aisle to help veterans. And those who are active duty servicemen and women. against the backdrop of the frustrations over health care more broadly with the Veterans Administration, and clearly the nation has dropped the ball in its commitment to provide health care, top quality health care to these men and women. Here's something that for those who have been in harm's way and remain in harm's way, that can be done in the short term to help. And I think that that does make it very good policy and good politics as well.
One of the real keys here is that it also applies to folks in the reserves and the National Guard.
Because that is a key area, as Ann said, that's an area that often can be overlooked. You know, the regular Army is, it gets the attention, as it rightly should. Those who are in the reserves and the National Guard deserve the same kind of treatment. And, you know, John said that the nation's dropped the ball, and I'll agree to this, to the extent that it hasn't yet risen up to tell Congress that this is important, that when we ask people to put their lives on the line in defense of our country, the least we can do is ensure that they have quality medical care when they get home.
And when you have the you know, the National Guard and the reserves performing as if they are active duty,
right,
with multiple tours, they have to be treated that way.
Absolutely.
And you're right. I mean, Shisecki's resignation there obviously accepts responsibility for the faulty data the underlings produce, but doesn't address the question that with a ninefold increase in demand for services, Congress has got to fund that. We have to have enough doctors, because these guys aren't sitting around twiddling
right
their thumbs. They just can't see that many patients.
And it's demand that's going to continue to go up.
Continue to grow, no question.
Especially with troops coming home from Afghanistan, as the president announced this week. On to something else. The governor's plan to expand the Healthy Indiana Plan won positive reviews from the public this week. There were two public hearings on HIP 2.0, and the feedback was one-sided in support of the plan. Governor Pence announced earlier this month he wants to use Medicaid money to expand Healthy Indiana to as many as 350,000 people. Healthy Indiana does require people to pay some fees where Medicaid does not. The public hearings are part of an effort to win federal approval for the expansion. John Katzenberger, was the reaction expected?
Yeah, I mean, they've done a nice job of helping the public understand what's going on and what they want to do. Winning the public is an important part of this, but the real constituency is CMS, and until they get that kind of approval, this will be just incidental.
CMS being the federal government agency,
right,
that must approve this expansion. I went to one of these hearings. It took about an hour. Probably a dozen people spoke. What you would call ordinary citizens who didn't really have any idea what was in the plan. They just wanted an opportunity to get health insurance. Everybody else benefits from this plan. Is that a problem? I mean, they're health care providers, who, and it will help their business.
Well, you also, though, in fairness, you also have, I think, AARP and some others that I guess theoretically would stand to benefit. But there are some other advocacy groups that one would imagine would have at their a motivation other than pure profit. This is an ongoing attempt, of course, these hearings, to try to convince the federal government of the value of this plan. Now,
my point is, what we're seeing here is the pressure that we didn't see that was placed on the governor in advance of this decision. There's a lot of people out there who think this is a good idea.
Well,
you've got it, particularly with the hospitals. You know, with the hospitals, with the whatever the indigent care supplement that they had been getting is phasing out, and they are going to be particularly hard hit with this without having the expansion. You know, I said before, this is a very good move on the governor's part. It's the right thing to do to cover hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers. I actually think he had a creative idea here with the idea of the co-pays. You can't be bumped off Medicaid, okay? You go back to the basic Medicaid if you don't pay
the
copay.
It's the basic HIP. You still,
right.
No,
or
you
the
have,
basic,
no, it's the savings
services
account. If you can't contribute to the savings account, then
you
get bumped
back
to the basic
right
plan where
right
there are some copays.
Okay.
Yes.
You get bumped to the basic plan, but if you make the savings account initiative, you get bumped up to a higher plan that covers more things. And I like the idea of incentivizing people to contribute to their whole health care as opposed to penalizing them if they don't have the ability to do that. I think that was creative. And I'm thinking, what are you shocked? I've been talking about health care expansion for 2 years. I want it to happen.
Well, but I mean, Mike Pence wanted it to happen his way.
And he compromised the Healthy Indiana plan to the point where the federal government should say yes to this. And because it's a win-win-win. The federal government would get another state, and they're at 27 now, and they want more. A lot of people would be insured who aren't. They win also. And Pence clearly wins because he's the one that put this together to do it this way. And it was what he's been talking about all along, that he wanted a consumer-driven plan. So this is a win-win-win.
And Democrats win because they've been saying that Indiana would be an island of the uninsured without this.
I'll give you that one, too. I mean, it's good for everybody. So I totally expect that at the end of this period, and by the way, if you're out there and you want to have input into this, the period ends June 21st. You can go online and say whatever you want to about this program, and they're looking for that kind of
.gov.
They're looking for that kind of input. But after this is over, I think the federal government will say yes, and we'll be able to move on. I think that's a good thing.
Well, there are things that the federal government clearly will like in here. You talked about, Ann, the second tier, you step up, and you do start to look at things like maternity coverage. You do start to look at things, vision and dental. And I think that is appealing. I don't know, and I have not studied this 2.0, HIP 2.0, enough to know if there are still caps, because if there are still caps, that's going to be a deal breaker, I think.
I don't think.
And I don't know the answer. Lifetime caps in terms of.
I think that would be a non-starter.
Breaker. Okay. Well, then maybe as we've said from the outset, it really, if the federal government is willing to let it be called whatever Mike Pence wants it to be called.
Who cares what it's called?
He can walk away with a victory and say he expanded on
his Medicaid expansion by another name.
And they've negotiated in, other states in different forms?
Yeah.
And it's taken a different form in every state.
That's right.
So why not this one?
That's right. No problem.
Meantime, a relatively new healthcare company made a jobs announcement this week. Our Health announced this week that it will double the size of its corporate headquarters in downtown Indianapolis. The company plans to hire 450 people by 2018. Founded in 2009, Our Health provides on-site clinical care for employers and their employees. The governor took part in the announcement.
While we're making a difference for economic opportunity here, it's even more important than that. We're making a difference in Hoosiers' lives and in their health. And I couldn't be more grateful for the ingenuity of these two entrepreneurs and for the fact that the state of Indiana continues to be a place where innovative businesses, particularly in the healthcare area, can continue to grow and to thrive.
John Schwanes, could Mike Pence become the healthcare governor?
He
wants to be the jobs governor.
He gets jobs here. You could get a twofer, perhaps, out of this.
Well, the Hospital Association's been saying that if you expand Medicaid, it's 30,000 jobs. So if he becomes, he could become the jobs governor by becoming the health care.
He could.
Governor.
I mean, look, whoever would have been in the governor's office right now would be able to lay claim to that, because there's such upheaval and fundamental change in the delivery of health care in our country and in this state. So he's, I guess you could say, in the right place at the right time. Now, having said that, if you can create a climate, a business climate, where you do foster the innovation that was showcased in this announcement, I mean, that's one thing Americans and Hoosiers are very good at doing, is coming up with solutions to vexing problems. And if these kinds of things start to take off, who knows? Maybe he can be the jobs governor and, as you say, the health care governor.
Well, all governors love to make jobs announcements.
Hadn't noticed that.
But if you can make one that's health care related at the moment, that's a twofer.
Well, you know, there's a reason why he came to this particular one and played a prominent role. And you can't blame him for that, because it is an important process, an important part of the process. The jobs are incredibly important. I think it's best to be the jobs governor, and then if you can be the health care governor after that, that's fine. I just think that the governor needs to have both hands on the reins and tightly run the ship.
These are well-paying jobs, high-paying jobs.
They're good-paying jobs, and it's also a good idea, because, I mean, if you have, you know, work-related injuries, for example, they don't have to take the whole day off to go for therapy. They can do it online, as it were, when the time's free. It makes perfect sense, and it shows that employers realize that having a healthy workforce, and obviously this will step up the preventive care part of the equation, too, which is so important. I just wonder whether our attorney general is going to drop his lawsuit on the mandate now, because we all recognize how important this is. And the governor wants the expansion. And here we have the attorney general charging forward nonetheless.
I wondered where you were.
I know.
Now it's all, like, there was ever any doubt. Come on. This is a great idea. I do agree with Ann that this company has really hit a niche here that makes sense, because they're taking their services to these very employers and their employees, and I think that's why you're seeing the tremendous growth that they're enjoying right now. And if they can expand 4,800 jobs here, that's a plus for everybody involved.
And other companies have started this. Monarch Beverage has been doing this for their employees, and they've had great success with it, so it's a perfect model.
Students in the Indianapolis public schools no longer need to worry about where their next meal is coming from. The school board approved universal free breakfast and lunch across the entire district this week. A federal grant will pay for the food. A principal at Harshman Middle School, Gerald McLeish, hopes it will encourage students to get to school early, specifically for breakfast. He says making sure they eat the most important meal of the day should have a positive impact in the classroom.
Students who sometimes choose to not have breakfast here in the cafeteria in the mornings perform less well in their academic subjects, and also have a little bit different attitude and behavior in the classroom.
And Delaney, who said there's no such thing as a free lunch?
Well, obviously it's not free. It's paid for by taxpayer money, but it's taxpayer money well spent. I mean, having the free lunch or the reduced fee lunch before had a stigma attached to it, and a lot of students were embarrassed to sign up for it. This way, everybody has it, and there is data that indicates they will do better and perform better in school, hopefully stay in school longer, and that's really the goal. I don't know how anybody could argue that it's okay for kids to be hungry in this country. I just don't know how you can.
80% of the students in IPS qualify for this, but under the previous circumstance, you had to sign up in order to take part in it. Now you won't have to sign up. Everybody's eligible. It seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it?
Yeah. The number's actually 77%, but I'll give you the 80. But it's a good idea to figure out a way to cover the rest of the students. And I'm glad they did it. I think this makes good sense, and I'm glad some of that tax dollar money is coming back to Indianapolis.
Amen.
I mean, this is the healthcare show today. Aside from the first topic on crime. Well, actually, let's say that's healthcare too. I think every topic you've addressed today has touched on well-being and healthcare. And I think that this is fun, as has been said, nothing more fundamental than giving young Hoosiers and those in Indianapolis in this district the chance to have good nutrition. That's the foundation for everything else.
I just hope that they've improved the menus enough that Johnny Marzetti's still not on the menu.
Johnny Marzetti.
Oh, that was the best stuff for food fights because it was gooey and kind of awful.
We know how you spent your youth.
Wow. Yeah, I always ate lunch at home, but it was two blocks from school. Finally, a tradition has come to an end at this week's Indianapolis 500.
Back home again in Indiana.
Jim Nabors sang Back Home Again in Indiana before drivers started their engines. Nabors first sang that song at the race in 1972. Earlier this year, the 83-year-old Nabors said there was a time in life when you have to move on, and he decided this week's race would be the last time he sings at the 500. Mike McDaniel, should the Speedway find a permanent replacement, or should they do away with the song?
No, you can't do away with the song. That'd be like eliminating my old Kentucky home before the Kentucky Derby. It's a huge part of the tradition of the track, and he did it well for a lot of years. I've got the answer. Since the Purdue band's playing, let's have the Purdue Glee Club sing Back Home Again in Indiana.
Now we want the Indiana Straight No Chasers.
Well, but they may not always be there, but the Purdue Glee Club will.
I'm pushing for Stephen Stolen.
Stephen Stolen.
WFYI's own Stephen Stolen.
There you go.
Oh, you're such a homer.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's better than
Gomer. Even if the Atlantic Records Straight No Chaser ceases touring, there is a student version, the name of which escapes me, but it's another alcohol-related name. But it will always be there as long as there is a cappella music in Indiana University. So there. We got the bases covered.
All right, so while we're talking about the race, tremendous race this year. 150 green laps after the start of the race. It broke the record of 63. Will this help bring back IndyCar?
Oh, I think it was a very exciting race, and obviously the finish was tremendous too, so I hope so.
second closest finish ever. IndyCar on the upswing?
Was for me. I won the pool.
The pool you ran.
I ran, by the way.
Our picks last week here on the show were a little lame, though. I don't think they were beyond lame.
I think I had Tony Kanaan.
Which I had, too. And could have carried the day, but that crash,
Tony was still running, but he was the last car among those running,
right,
I think.
So, we get partial credit for that.
Yeah, we'll be back again next year. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Gleaming candelabra for me.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T. Working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.